I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Hamonville back to Koivu. Into the Florida zone. Koivu waiting. Centers. It's deflected in off the skate. They score. Hamonville on the redirect. And Minnesota's on the board first.
Koivu. Looking for Vanek. Vanek fires loose. They score! Parisi hammering away. And the Wild are up 2-0.
Parisi hammering away. What a typical visual that is. Right about the top of the crease area, slamming away until the either the whistle blows or the puck goes in the net. Good morning, Chad Graff.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. A week ago.
Oh, yeah? You feeling
hitting
better?
Hitting the cough button about every other second. Could barely get a full sentence out.
Well, I noticed you got the non-drowsy daytime medicine
buried
here.
Buried it.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Onto another package.
Second. Absolutely. David Helmer, good morning to you.
Morning. How's it going?
Wonderful. We've got a great show planned for everybody today. Obviously, the Minnesota Wild continue their role. They are playing some great hockey and have propelled themselves back into the playoff race. A big 2-1 win on Thursday following up that tough overtime loss, but still getting a point in Winnipeg on the back end of back-to-backs. That was their third in 4 days. And then, of course, Thursday would be their fourth in 6 days against a non-traditional rival, if you will, again in the Florida Panthers. A tough game for them to get up for, and they got the job done in what Mike Yod really referred to as a trapping-type game.
Yeah, he called it the classic trap game. I mean, you look at the Wild schedule, every game for them was so meaningful before that. They were playing all the teams that they were chasing in the standings, all these teams that are bunched, you know, 10 through 6 in the standings, and then all of a sudden they welcome the Florida Panthers. So good luck getting up for that one, but the Wild didn't. I mean, it was a 50-50 game, I thought. Devan Dubnyk, you know, again played well for them, but the Wild did play well in that game, and they were able to get up for it and had the legs for it.
Well, we're going to hear some feedback on that game, and not only that, a much-improved Florida Panther team that is in the midst of a playoff run themselves in the Eastern Conference, so that team's gotten a lot better. Good to see Nick Bjugstad continues to light it up, the former Blaine Bengal, now with 19 on the season. He had, of course, the big contract extension this year, so good for him. Way to get it done. Mike Yeo, though, did talk about how important it was to come back and pick up 2 points some way, somehow against a team that might have put them to sleep.
Our puck management was very poor for the second half of the first period. We were very concerned about this game, just coming off an emotional game, 4 games, 6 nights, 3 games, 4 days, and just an opponent that you don't have that hatred, that fear of. And it was a kind of a classic trap game, and challenged the guys, and they responded, and not to say that we're at our best, but we found a way to win and did a lot of good things along the way.
Did a lot of good things, and that was a team that plays so similar to the Wild. It was almost like the Wild were looking in the mirror. So many things that they do philosophy-wise, the way that they play, their neutral zone, their breakout, their defensive zone, so much of what they do is so similar to the Wild. The Florida Panthers are no joke, and not just do those teams play similarly, but you look at the standings, they're both ninth, they're both right there battling for a playoff spot. That was a big game, a sneaky big game for the Wild.
Bet you didn't know I had a little lineage now to the Florida Panthers.
No, what is it?
It's not a big deal, but Peter Lucko, the former Philadelphia Flyers chairman, is the chairman of the board at Point Streak Technologies, whom I do a lot of work with, is now on board with the Florida Panthers. Kind of interesting. An office was built in Philadelphia for him. Now he's in Florida, so it looks like another office is going into South Beach.
Look at all these Minnesota Florida Panther
connections.
Isn't that
incredible? Absolutely.
Oof, we've hit two on like 5 minutes.
Like
nice.
Like anybody cares, right?
Oh, wow.
One of the things that a big topic of discussion post-game, Chad, was the special teams. And it had the feeling that, you know, the Minnesota Wild power play has been getting better and better. And I think a lot of the puck movement has improved. And is that because Matt Dumba's now more confident? I think you're only as good as your defensemen are on a power play. But I think he's looking very good with the man advantage.
I think Matt Dumba plays a big role in the second defensive unit. But as far as that the second power play unit, but as far as that goes, Mikhail Granlund has been huge for them. Yeah. When he was out, it was so hard for that second unit to set anything up. You know, every time it seemed like the only way that the second group could get into the zone was just by chasing it and seeing what happened after that. And, you know, they're usually only out there 30 or 40 seconds. So it's so important for them to get in the zone to set up. And that's what Mikhail Granlund's done. And really, you know, the top power play, though, has been outstanding. Thomas Vanek is just so much better on the power play. Mikko Koivu is playing as well as he's played in a long time. The power play, Ryan Suter scoring, Zach Parise's there. The power play has been much, much better. But the other night, what won them the game, when you look at the special teams, it was the penalty kill. The penalty kill has been outstanding.
Without a guy like Matt Cook, who's been so vital to that for the past year and a half for this team. But Zach Parise talked about those special teams and the need for them to be better, especially on the power play and some of the things that have been working for them.
It's been real. I think our power play's been really good lately. Even times we haven't scored, we've been moving around really well. It just feels like we're a little more active. I think we're moving a little more. We're supporting each other more. I think that teams that are either going to be aggressive, you have to move it crisp. We've been doing that. We've been using our middleman really well and kind of collapsing their box. And that's how you got to beat the aggressive.
And you know, when you think back to that Winnipeg game, the special teams were really, whether or not they scored on them or not, I think it helped stem the tide. I mean, that was a Wild team that was exhausted. You could tell. And, you know, you can talk as a broadcaster having never played or whatever at that level about finding your legs. You don't really know what that feels like, let's be honest. But you could clearly visually see that that team was doing everything they could within their power to stick with a very well-rested and, you know, desperate Winnipeg team. Obviously, we're going to get into the Evander Kane issue in our second segment. He was on his way out the door, and it looked like a fresh new beginning for that team. But the Wild did a really good job utilizing those to stem the tide defensively and also create some scoring chances offensively.
We look at how impressive this stretch has been for the Wild, but look at what it's been, you know, in terms of the schedule and how much they've had to overcome in that sense. It seems like every night they were playing a game, 4 and 6 games, and we know what that does. We can talk about that physically, but mentally, when you're chasing teams, and these aren't October games, and each of these games is basically a 4-point game with teams that you're playing in the standings, that is just an exhaustive stretch. So now it's pretty much game practice for the rest of the month. So we'll see.
Really, the rest of the year.
It's amazing. Mike Yeo was just joking around the other day that they may not have much time to practice the rest of the year because of how quick this is going to go.
So I was doing a little bit of research here in some of the teams, the Minnesota Wild, they're chasing. And just about every team, even from Chicago, who has even opened a little bit of a crack for the Minnesota Wild in their chase, they now have, I believe, 72 points or 73. The Wild with a couple games in hand on the Chicago Blackhawks. If they can win those two games in hand, suddenly are just about 5 or 6 points out of third place in the Central Division. Really first and second with Nashville, St. Louis is out of the question. But the Blackhawks, after their big run in Las Vegas, boy, I suppose everybody wants that NHL team to come to fruition. Seems like Gary Bettman's pushing hard for that. But the fact is they have not been very solid either. The constant trend that I've seen with a lot of teams in this league, it's not just Minnesota that went through their stretch of really brutalness. I mean, every team has a lot of losses. Boom, 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 boom. Overtime loss, 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 OT loss, win, and so forth and so on. Every team has struggled a little bit, and I think a lot of it has to do with health.
It does, but I think that the Wild stretch was a little bit different. A lot of the time they were getting blown out. A lot of the time it was very clear that it was the goaltending. Chicago's obviously not having that problem. So the Wild stretch was definitely a little bit different, but at the end of the day, loss is a loss, unless it's an overtime loss in the NHL. So all these teams go through this stretch, but you look at the teams ahead of the Wild, they're not playing as well as the Wild are. All of these teams, Vancouver's 5-5-0 in their last 10, Calgary's 6-4-0. There is some ground to be made up, and keep in mind, it is so, so difficult to make up points in the NHL, but the Wild have done it in the last 12 games. They're 9-1-2 in the last 12, and it can be done.
Well, the Winnipeg is 2-5-2 in their last, nine games. They've played 57 games, two more than the Wild. They have 66 points to Minnesota's 61, so Minnesota can tie that team. Calgary, by the way, 6-4 in their last 10. Minnesota gaining ground there. The Flames with 63 points in 55 games, so a win for Minnesota with that game in hand can tie. We can talk about all these scenarios all we want. There's still quite a few hockey games to be played. There's a lot of things that can occur. All of these teams are an injury two away from Armageddon, if you will. And don't forget, Dallas puts in 5 goals last night. However, Tyler Seguin gets that lower body injury. Do we know the extent of the injury on that Dallas superstar?
We don't. We don't know the extent of whether there will be supplementary discipline. I mean, that's a huge loss for Dallas. That was a bad hit at a bad time in the game, late in the game. It was an ugly hit, too. I don't know if you saw it, but he came across almost like he chop-blocked him in football. It was a really low hip check. It was not a good hit right at the blue line.
I think it's fair to say Tyler Seguin was targeted. And he went out. That's a big part of Dallas's offensive thrust. Jason Spezza is playing very well for them. And why do we talk about these people on the ice? Because they all matter to the overall texture to the Minnesota Wild's chase to the playoffs, who have found their way back into the mix of things. And is this honestly, I mean, I think about the shows we were doing about 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, Chad, and it was just straight melancholy negativity. But I mean, what else were we supposed to talk about? It was reality.
We were talking about whether the Wild were going to be sellers at the trade deadline, and that was completely fair. I mean, for a while it looked like it might go that way, and if Devan Dubnyk hadn't come in and playing as he has, if the Wild hadn't played better in front of Dubnyk, I mean, the whole thing goes back to Dubnyk, and it all starts with him, because he, you know, gave the Wild the boost that they needed. They finally started to play confident in front of Nicholas Backstrom and Darcy Kemper. They were going nowhere. Nicholas Backstrom may not play for the Wild again this season or again in his career.
Darcy Kemper.
That's amazing to think about.
I said, or will Darcy Kemper?
It's going to be all Devan Dubnyk for a long time. Kemper will get a few spot starts here and there, but this is Devan Dubnyk's show.
Do you think he has the ability to withstand and maintain? I mean, I know he's been a number one in Edmonton. Can he do this? I mean, is he going to run out of gas in the middle of March, end of March, early April, and into the playoffs? Or do you think he has the mental and physical wherewithal to see this through?
He says no. He says he's good to go. We'll see what actually happens.
Everybody says that.
I mean, one of the things to look at with him was he was the backup in Arizona. So you look at around the league at all these goalies, Varlamov, Rask in Boston, all these goalies that are the number one guy, the bona fide number one guy that play 5 out of 6 nights or 5 out of 6 games. And Dubnyk is nowhere near them in terms of the number of games that he's played. So it's a little bit different when all of your games come basically from January 15th and on. But Devan Dubnyk hasn't played the minutes that a lot of goalies have. So I do think there's reason to believe that the Wild can ride him down the stretch.
I do think of what I'll call the Mike Liutz disease back in the 80s when the St. Louis Blues and the Hartford Whalers were running him out for 72 out of 82 games, and it really physically appeared as though he ran out of gas come the postseason. I'm just hoping that a guy like Devan Dubnyk, you know, your hips get sore, your knees go, all kinds of things. You know, when your lower half goes, your upper half, your mind goes. It's just like any other sport. So I think the key thing for them is you have to ride him to get where you go. I mean, how can you not?
Right.
But at the end of the day, is he going to be able to sustain this to get the Wild the berth and then be effective in the playoffs? That, to me, is the big question. And stay healthy the rest of the way. No more Zucker-type injuries. No more Ryan Carter-type injuries. And that's a tough thing to say in this game.
Yeah, and just to go back, look at Nicklas Backstrom. When his health started to falter, it was that lockout shortened season when he played in 46 of 48 games. That was the beginning of all of that for Nicklas Backstrom.
That's my concern. We saw it happen, and it definitely was an issue there. First segment is over. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more Wild hockey. We're also going to talk about the Red Army film and the 30 for 30 copycat. All coming up right here on the ice on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
In the traditional motion picture story, the villains are usually defeated. The ending is a happy one. I can make no such promise for the picture you're about to watch.
I was born in Soviet Union. It was pretty rough. No running water, no toilets. You know, you got the fish only one day a week. It was Thursday. But I was a happy kid. I played a game.
Slava Fetisov. The Soviet best player in the world, they were calling him, defenseman in the world. They're calling him in the late to mid-80s, and of course he was. He a part of the Red Army team, and that was a trailer that you can find on YouTube if you just do Red Army hockey trailer. A great film. Gabe Polsky, he's been on these airwaves now, what, Dave Helmer, twice?
A few times. He was on with Bob on the phone a couple weeks ago, and then he was in person this week, and he was on the KQ Morning Show.
Because they had the big premiere that came out on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
That one was on February 11th. They had a big reception and screening and a QA with Gabe Polsky on the film. And, you know, really, Chad, what that film is about, and if you watch the trailer, if you're a hockey fan and listening to this show, I think it might be worth the time to get to the Uptown Theater right on the corner of Hennepin there, and we're not getting anything for selling tickets here, trust me, but I think it's a great cultural piece, and I think it talks a lot to what the times were like, and I think it's easy. I talked to you about this before the start of the program, Chad. I asked when you were born, and it was clearly after the Berlin Wall crashed, and I grew up in the heart of the fear of the Cold War through the 70s. We knew Vietnam, and we knew the whole Monroe Doctrine and the whole thing about the expansion of communism and, you know, what the Soviet Union was attempting to do. What we also knew was that hockey game in 1980 wasn't like one now, where we see Team USA win in a skills competition, kind of a folly, really, if you will, with TJ Oshie going up and down four or five times on the shootout. Instead, it was the Soviet Union, and it's depicted in this Red Army film. It was the Soviet Union that used hockey, that was their most passionate game, as a tool in which to beat the North American teams, USA especially, and Canada, to really assert some form of dominance, at least politically, at least a message, just sending a hardcore message. It was real. And so when you did see those signs, there was a lot of political signage in the building. That was all very real. Curious to know from your perspective, Chad, do you get a feel of that, or is that just sort of something that floats in the wind to you?
No, I think you definitely get a feel of it, and you hear about it all the time, you know, from everybody. And I think so much of the 1980 games, as you remember, what it was about that. And it's so easy to watch Miracle, and Miracle, I think the Disney movie tried to show some of that, but there was so much of it, you know, the scene where they're coming out and all the letters are on the wall. So they definitely tried to show some of it, but I don't know if there's a way to really appreciate all of that unless you lived through it.
Well, I would say at about age 14 in 1980 when that occurred, I would say politically worldwide, I felt with the Iranian hostage crisis, and we just felt very, very weak worldwide as a nation. And going into a game like that, I think from an American psyche, it was so critically important. Now, this film isn't really about Miracle. Rather, it's about the things that surrounded Miracle. And it's more of a look at the Soviet Union, the Russian Ice Hockey Federation, what a jerk Viktor Tikhonov was, and how he held these guys back. And what was ironic is, if you've seen the 30 for 30 that came out on ESPN on Monday night, it was very odd. And Dave, we were talking about Gabe Polsky spent a lot of time putting this film together. Obviously, it's fair to say that I'm sure that his film was in the works well before that 30 for 30 piece came out. Did he talk about that?
Well, yeah, he actually spent a lot of time with the guys that he has in his documentary. He spent 12 to 16 hours sitting down with them, and we even talked about this movie about a month ago. So it's been in the works for a long time, and the 30 for 30 stuff, it's kind of more of a TV show where here's a script, we bang it out in a couple days and edit it put it together and throw it out. But this, he spent a lot of time. He really felt his passion for getting down to the bottom of what was it like on their side.
Well, so it felt a little pieced together on the 30 for 30. They had a couple of guys and some angry Russians who couldn't speak very any English, and the subtitles were so fast you couldn't even read them, and then they'd have who you were listening to, right? And it was just like, wow, what in the world is going on here? I was exhausted by the time that film was over. But I did feel as though it was sort of a rush to market to try to confuse the audience on this Red Army film or to capitalize on it. So I would caution against anybody. Check out the film, because if you're a hockey fan, it really tells the tale more of how a guy like Vatisov was able to come to America and he was able to play hockey, and then how reviled he was in this league, how hard it was for him to get through, how the wives wouldn't talk to his wife, how his kids couldn't play with the other players' kids, how difficult it was, and then how great Scotty Bowman was with his solution.
And how well that turned out. He was the first guy to, you know, with the trio to bring the cup back to Moscow. That was, you know, I think the fascinating stuff from all of that was seeing, you know, the behind the scenes in Russia, living in the barracks, being there 11 months of the year, not being allowed to see family. I mean, that was just amazing.
When they're dying.
His father died and he wasn't able to, he had to practice the next day. He wasn't able to go be with his family. It was so powerful to see that stuff and where they lived and what they did. And it was just unbelievable.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Tikhonov died in November, this past November. Do you think he had family around him? I bet you money he did. Now it's okay, right?
Yeah. You know, well,
but you've got a game to get ready for. I just thought that guy was a jerk.
They won. I mean, that team
yeah.
won.
They did. And they also lost. I think that's an important thing, too. So, anyway, check that film out. I think it's really well worth it. Chad, any more thoughts that you have on that? Are you going to check it out?
Yeah, Uptown Theater. This is Valentine's Day. This might be my only night to check it out. We're off on the road. We leave tomorrow. So I'm not covering the game tonight. This may be my only opportunity.
You're not covering the game?
I know.
Why?
Yeah, well, I get, you know, 6 or 7 games off a year.
Is that why you're so relaxed?
I know. It's amazing. Wow. I got my coffee in peace. I read the paper. I'm not worried about what I'm going to be writing in a little bit.
A very placid Chad Graff here.
Yeah, I didn't even bother putting my contacts in.
So
great.
Who covers the deal?
Brian Murphy will be there. He does a little bit of everything for us, but a lot of Vikings.
Yeah, he used to cover the Wild, too, back in the day.
He was very good.
Does a nice job on the beat there. Let's change our attentions now, too. And I think this is an important topic. It's Evander Kane, the Winnipeg Jets, and it matters because it really does impact the Minnesota Wild. It is why they've been 2-5-2, and they've had some major issues. And there was a lot going on there before he got traded to Buffalo for Drew Stafford and Tyler Myers, who, by the way, was the Calder Trophy winner in 2010, Rookie of the Year. What is that guy, about 6'11"? I mean, the guy is huge, and he can fight. First of all, we'll get into the reason of the trade, but let's get into do you think Stafford and Myers for Bogosian and Evander Kane is a fair trade both ways?
I do. I think Buffalo, you know, if Evander Kane turns into what he could be, and that's a big if, because he's had a lot of issues in Winnipeg. There, it seemed like every couple months there was something going on with him. There was stuff in Vegas. There was stuff, supposedly he was walking out on his tabs at restaurants in Winnipeg. There was a lot of weird stuff going on with Evander Kane in Winnipeg. But if, I mean, the guy on the ice, if he reaches his potential, is an outstanding hockey player. The type of guy that you don't want to play against. He's willing to drop the gloves with you. He'll go into the corners. He's a very, very talented hockey player. Buffalo could be getting a really nice piece for years to come.
The scary part about Buffalo's acquisition is you have a player that's known to have been a part of a locker room, as we'll say, schism, that's been an issue. When we get into this a little bit deeper, it's not all him, but it's definitely a part of it, Chad, and I think that's a little bit of a risk and a gamble. I think Bogosian's a terrific physical player and a well-rounded defenseman. He's the guy that basically ended Pierre-Marc Bouchard's career with that concussion, if you remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah, he ran him into the wall 2 years ago. That was pre-Chad Graff.
That was pre-Chad Graff.
I've got that memory. Was it? Is it an elephant or a mouse that's got the memory? Is it the elephant?
An elephant.
I got a memory. Yeah, I'll never forget that. It was a cheap shot, second to none. But this is a piece that I wanted to share with you and get your opinion from Gary Lawless, the Winnipeg Free Press. I get this from the Fischler Report. He talks about how this whole Kane thing has brought Evander Kane, of course, if you're just joining us, has brought the team down. And he says there's a ton of blame to go around. He points out Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien, Kane himself, Paul Maurice, the coach, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and anybody else involved with the situation. Basically, what happened was the big issue, the big blow up, is that Kane shows up for a team meeting in sweats. Byfuglien determines that's not good enough, tosses his teammates' gear into a shower or a cold tub, whatever. Kane's belongings are now soaked. His pride and very likely his heart are damaged. He's been humiliated by one of his big brothers, that being Byfuglien, one of the men he's lived and worked with for 6 years. Maybe there was a time when this was a way and a manner in which things were settled, but in today's world, things have changed. So here's where the blame game flies. Ladd is a captain. He allows it to happen and doesn't do anything about it. If he stood by and let Byfuglien do it, this, according to Lawless, is on him. Maurice takes pride in saying, "I let the players run the room." Now he looks soft because he allowed this to happen. I think that's an issue. Do you?
I do. This was the story of the NHL the past week. This is
absolutely
what I mean. Winnipeg has been looking to trade Evander Kane for a long time, and this sped up the process exponentially. This became the story. This became, you know, every people were going to Winnipeg reporters just to do this story. This was the big news around the league. So I think it absolutely became an issue. I think that trading Evander Kane was necessary. You just look at what that can do to a locker room, and when guys talk about, you know, when things are going well and teams are winning and guys say, you know, it's a good locker room in here, this shows you what it can be or what it can get to when things are not going well, and that's what it was for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, so then Lawless says Maurice had to determine his influence was needed in this situation. He effectively lost a player, a skilled and productive forward on a team that he can't afford to move without a suitable replacement. Is Drew Stafford suitable replacement for Evander Kane?
No, I mean, not right now.
So they lose in this situation.
Well, they get other pieces. But, yeah, for a forward, they lose in that situation. Evander Kane was on a third-line role, but he was, you know, he's a guy kind of like a Nino Niederreiter that, you know, didn't have a great fit at the beginning, but a guy who's got a lot of potential and can be a very good goal scorer.
For Drew Stafford, he comes back to really a couple of miles away from his collegiate roots back at North Dakota. So there may be a little bit of an infusion there, a little bit of a resuscitation, a jump start. I have a lot of respect for Drew Stafford's game, but to wrap up this story, basically he says, finally, some of this falls, he, of course, I'm speaking of Gary Lawless of the Winnipeg Free Press, falls on Cheveldayoff's desks. There's been numerous warning signs where Kane was concerned. It was a marriage destined to end. It waited too long. Byfuglien did what veterans have done to teammates for a long time. He tried to mock Kane into submission, but forgot that this type of behavior is no longer accepted in our culture, and a focus on that fact didn't work. Byfuglien, who by all accounts isn't a bully, tried to send a message, but his tactics were clumsy and poorly executed. So basically, the Winnipeg Jets have been exposed. Their locker room's a disaster. They made a trade to try to fix it. If they don't make the playoffs, they have themselves, Paul Maurice, Kevin Cheveldayoff to blame, and the Wild will have them to thank.
7 losses in their last 9. The Wild have one more game against them, but Winnipeg's got 5 points over the Wild right now.
So there you go, folks. The inside story right here on the Ice Radio Show continues. Tim Colamine coming up right after this. It is so that time. The state of Minnesota high school hockey, the girls' state tournament, starts this week. By the way, I will be on the call with Jim Erickson and a combination of color commentators for the quarterfinal round on prep45.com, so be sure to check out all of the action. I'm sure it'll be the best $4.97 you'll ever spend for a day's worth of high school hockey. The girls' tournament brackets have been set. We bring on Tim Colaminen from Breakdown Sports USA to talk some high school hockey. We have some of the seeding set on the boys' side of things, and just like that, Tim, November was yesterday, and we're here today, and it's time now for the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I mean, for most of the winter, we kind of felt like it was spring, like early spring. So I was already thinking baseball, but yeah, here we are.
It means you're getting old.
Season. We got playoffs now.
Yeah, you know, when you get old, those years go faster and faster, Tim. So we've had a lot of things settled here. The number one seeded Lakeville South Cougars in girls hockey. There are a ton of overtime games here, by the way, in the section finals and close hockey games, which was really entertaining. They defeat their rival Lakeville North by a score of 2-1. So the Cougars of Lakeville South will represent the Section 1 AA.
And you know, it's kind of fun. You mentioned a lot of close games, a lot of overtimes. One of the things I think you're seeing in the girls' hockey, we had a few upsets too, and I think you're going to get into some of those in a minute here. But I think what you're seeing is just a little bit more parity at the top. I mean, I know we talk about, you know, there's obviously some superstar teams out there, and we'll see some of those at the state tournament. But there's, you know, a few sections, and I know you're going to talk about Section 2 in a second here too, where, you know, you have a handful of really top teams, and it maybe isn't a surprise to see an upset of a one seed. But it's still nice to see. Nice to see it get shaken up a little bit like that.
Well, a 2-seed did come through in the Section 2 AA as Edina in overtime defeats Eden Prairie at the Richfield Ice Arena by a score of 4-3. And for Edina, this is a team that almost to a degree, I was at the Walzer tournament back over the Christmas period. I don't want to say they looked dead in the water, but they looked vulnerable to me to a degree. But they've been getting some very good goaltending, and Taylor Williamson, obviously a Ms. Hockey finalist, has been a real catalyst to that hockey club, and they defeated what I think everybody felt the state tournament was running through Eden Prairie this year, a very good hockey club yesterday in overtime.
Yeah, and you know, I actually, to agree with your point there, I saw their quarterfinal game, Edina that is, I saw part of that quarterfinal game against 7-seed Prior Lake, and it was a 3-1 game. I mean, Edina did control play, but it was scoreless through a period, and you kind of thought, you know, it just seemed like they were kind of playing around with them a little bit. You kind of wondered, when are they going to put the hammer down? And they never really did in that game. And even their semifinal game against Chaska Chan was a close game, too. And, you know, none of their three games has been one-sided by any means. And then, obviously, getting past Eden Prairie. To be honest, after seeing them in that quarterfinal, I wasn't sure they had it in them, but they obviously came to play in that section final.
This is Tim Colomine, and he's from Breakdown Sports USA, does some great work out there covering high school hockey. And we're talking about the Girls State High School Hockey Tournament, which is coming up this week at the XL Energy Center. We're in the Class AA right now. Egan was a team in the Section 3 AA that defeated Woodbury 6-1 in their quarterfinal matchup. They beat Eastridge 6-1 in the semis, and they look like they're well on their way. And they ran into the number 3 seed Eastview Lightning, who knocked off number 2 Hastings by a score of, get this, 7-1. And the goal scoring onslaught continued for Eastview as they captured the 6-4 win over Egan to propel themselves to the state tournament.
Yeah, how about that? You know, coming through and just taking care of business as the 3 seed. I think they're the lowest seed in the state tournament. And, you know, even in that final against Egan, 6 goals, 6 different players. So there's really, I mean, you look at it and you think, okay, who do we focus on? You know, a lot of teams are riding that top player, that top line, but when you start getting scoring from your second line and your third line, and you know you've got some balance, you're going to be dangerous, even though you're a 3 seed.
Hill Murray is going to be an issue in the state tournament, the 4AA. They beat my boy Kevin May's daughter's team, Emma. Of course, she's a goaltender of the year finalist by a score of 3-1. I believe there's an empty netter in that one against Crete and Durham Hall. So the Hill Murray Pioneers had a great tournament last year. And, you know, sometimes you have to lose before you win, Tim. You know, you've got to get there and suffer that heartbreak. The Hill Murray Pioneers could be their year now. It could be set up for them to get something done.
Yeah, we're going to find out the seeding here, a little bit later on, either today or tomorrow. I forget when they announced that.
I think it's later today.
Later today, yeah. So we'll see where the other coaches think that Hill Murray team stands, but I wouldn't be surprised with Eden Prairie getting knocked off if we might see Hill Murray get that number 1 overall seed. We'll see how it plays out. Edina's got a cage for that too. So
in the 5AA, you have number 2 seed Blaine upending Centennial, of course, crosstown rivals, in a thriller by a score of 3-2. Blaine is no slouch either, and they're a team that's going to be reckoned with come the state tournament here next week as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and another 1 seed going down there too. So we're
love the 1 seeds. I sense a little glee in your voice, Tim. Why is that? You like get giddy, all happy.
If you're to ask me to make my predictions as to who's going to get to the state tournament, I would end up picking mostly 1 seed. I just would.
But you love it when they lose. You're one of those underdog guys. You don't like the dynasty, do you?
I think you might be onto something.
That's the Duluth thing in you. I think that's the Duluth thing.
He's the ultimate low guy. So.
Yeah, we know what you're all about. The team to be reckoned with, too, is 6AA. Here they are again. The Minnetonka Skippers looked in trouble against Wayzata as they were behind in that game, I think by a score of 2-1 at one point. They come back at Parade Ice Gardens yesterday and win in overtime by a score of 3-2. They knock off Wayzata, and there once again is the man known as EJ, one of the great guys in hockey, Eric Johnson's team, will be bidding for yet another state title, and you have to think that it runs through them.
Yeah, there you go. I forget my one seed talk earlier. Here's your one seed right here. Everybody else is playing for that two seed behind them. But yeah, they were down 2-1 in the third period. They needed a goal from Kippen Keller with about 5 minutes to go, and then Emma Bingham in overtime wins it for them. So a little bit of a scare for Minnetonka, but that section right there, as it is in boys hockey, section six, pretty much the toughest top to bottom. You've got about four or five teams, they're all ranked in the top 10.
In the 7AA, Elk River and Andover are going to go at it in the final. And again, another overtime game. And this time, the number two seed Andover Huskies defeat the Elk River Zimmerman Elks by a score of 5-4 to capture the Section 7AA title. Tim in the 8AA, Roseau, with a 15-12-0 record, defeats St. Cloud, the St. Cloud Icebreakers, in overtime by a score of 3-2. So there are plenty of overtime games in the 2A to set up what's going to be, I think, a very well-balanced class AA tournament. But I think we agree, not just because of their name, but they're very well-coached, good hockey club, that Minnetonka is going to be a tough one to be dealt with here in the state tournament.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they're just so balanced top to bottom. I know we talked about that earlier with East. You guys, the 3 seed coming out of their section. Just because they're getting that balance right now in the state tournament or in the section tournament.
Red Wing.
Minnetonka really has had that balance all year long. I mean, they've got the top end players too. Don't get me wrong. They certainly do. But it's just a strong lineup all the way through.
Red Wing will represent the class 1A, the section 1A in the 1A tournament as they picked up their win against the Northfield High School edition. And we'll continue to roll through here in the single A just to get you the matchups for that. Hutchinson is in as well. They defeated Litchfield, Dassel, Cocato. That in the section 2. We move along to now the section 3. The winner in that one was New Ulm as they will once again be in the tournament. You know a lot about that section, don't you, Tim Cullen?
Section 3?
Yes.
I'm not going to claim to have any expertise whatsoever on that section. On the boys' side, I know a little bit about Section 3. On the girls' side, those teams, that's so far away from me. I have never seen any of that in person, so it'll be a treat when I see New Ulm at the state tournament.
You know how you get glee throwing watching the top seeds get tossed out? I get glee throwing you and Bart Archer under the bus every once in a while. It's a lot of fun.
You're asking me about my Section 3A girls' knowledge.
You've been exposed. You've been exposed. In the Section 4A for the girls, South St. Paul winners over St. Paul United. That was in overtime by a score of 2-1. A bit of a surprise there. I think that was one where we were expecting St. Paul United to find their way back. Blake needed overtime to get past Breck by a score of 3-2. By the way, the Blake Bears moving up to the 2A, to the 2AA for next year. Alexandria is going to be in the state tournament. They were winners over Fergus Falls. That in the 6A, and then we move along to the 7A. We go for you here to set up your finals. Hibbing Chisholm defeats Proctor Hermantown, another number one seed. Tim, I'm sure you're very happy about that. That was knocked off.
Well, you know, the Class A was a little bit different. We had 6 number one seeds come through, as you'll read here when you get to the 8 single A.
Thief so River Falls.
Only 2 upsets, and they were both number 2 seeds, so not so much.
Thief River Falls comes through. How about the boys' side of things? Now we take a look over at the Class 2A. There have been 3 of the Class A and 2 of the Class AA sections that have been determined from a seeding perspective. And we're going to focus on the Class AA for now. In the 7AA, Elk River Zimmerman gets the number 1 seed. Grand Rapids gets the 2. Duluth East with the 3. And the wild card team is St. Michael Albertville, 21-4-0 on the season with the 4. But what's kind of dogging them along the way here is they did lose to Duluth East. They have a very nice in-section record of 6-1, but they haven't really beaten some of the upper echelon teams in the section or with too grandiose of a challenging schedule. It's their time now to shine and show us that record is for real.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're hoping and they're ready to do. It's an interesting program and one we talked about in the beginning of the season as kind of an up and comer. And obviously they had their best season ever. And well, let's see if they can carry it into the playoffs and make that next step. I kind of think from them that it might be a year early. You know, they they'll make some noise, and they may even get into that section semifinal. But you know, sometimes, like you said before, you need to be there once and get knocked off before you can get over that hump. We'll see if they can early, though. If they can, you know, more power to them.
And you never rule out Duluth East. The Greyhounds are always so well coached, and they do such a good job come playoff time. However, I think, too, a man, Mike Randolph, will say, you know what, my club is a 500 team, and we could win one, we could lose one. However, they did tie Elk River a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, that by a score of 1-1. Over in the 8AA, Bemidji gets the number one seed. Is this the year they break through, Tim, for the first time since 1986 from the era of the great late George Palawa? Or is this, again, the Moorhead Roseau show who've been representing the section since 1996?
Well, I tell you, it sure looks like their year, doesn't it? I mean, they beat Moorhead twice. They swept them. They swept Roseau. I mean, they've cruised through the section. They've rarely been tested. I saw that
10-1, Tim. Moorhead. 10-1. Or I'm sorry, 9-0 in the section.
Yeah, 9-0 in the section. You know, Moorhead did have them down in the third period here, but then just kind of collapsed, and Bemidji scored 3-1, 4-2. At this point, it looks like it goes through them. Although I really like the way Moorhead's been playing lately, and I have a really tough time picking against somebody other than Roseau or Moorhead. I don't think Roseau's going to get there this year. I think we're going to see a Bemidji-Moorhead final, but I'm feeling a toss-up, probably an overtime game, to be honest.
I'm going to hold that to you. Bemidji's given up just 35 goals in 25 games this year. Quite impressive. Tim, thanks for joining us here today. I'm sure you're going to be out at the rink somewhere tying some skates.
You got it. That's where I'm headed.
What a shock. Good luck to you. Good luck to the young ladies. And I will be talking to you a little bit later. Have yourself a great afternoon. Tim Kolaminen from Breakdown Sports USA, breaking down the high school hockey world for you when we come back. Chad Graff and myself will be taking a look at the Minnesota Wild Carolina Hurricane contest tonight. Also, a couple predictions along the way. On the Ice continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Good, happy Valentine's morning to everybody out there. I'm sure everybody's under the stress and pressure of coming up with a creative Valentine's Day. But, Chad, you're going to be going to a film tonight, I think, Red Army.
The Red Army. I can't think of a more romantic date than that.
Are you bringing your date to that?
Possibly.
I'm trying to bring mine, too.
Are you?
She kind of rung me up.
For not one.
Yeah, I said, well, I kind of want to do it, but it's hockey related. And she's like, I'm happy
some
for
some red ya. Roses, some
she
red army.
She said, well, it's red.
Yeah, I this
said,
could this
She
could
said,
work
enjoy
well.
That. Absolutely. I stand corrected. And you know what? I am throwing the MSHSL under the bus.
Oof.
Because I went to that as my official scoring bit here, and it showed that Roseau was the winner over Buffalo, and that was the Bison who came up with the win. So they will be representing, and Buffalo Bison Hockey corrected me on Twitter. Thank you so much for that. I apologize for that. I was going off of what I thought was an accurate publication. There usually is. Buffalo beats Roseau by a score of 4-2, so they will be there. It's been a steady ascent for that team. I've been watching them closely. They were in the 6AA, if I remember correctly, for quite a while. Now in the 8AA, get the job done. My out-on-a-limb prediction at the start of the year in one of Tim's magazines, I write a couple pieces in there, and you know they go through a reporter's question-answer thing, was that the Buffalo Bison boys would break through and under Aaron Johnson make it to the state tournament. So we'll see if the boys can follow the girls. They've got a lot of work to do in a tough section, but Bemidji will be tough to beat. So thank you for that update, and my apologies for that. And once again, Buffalo, the Bison in the 8AA will be representing that section in the state tournament. Let's talk a little bit about this Carolina Hurricanes team. They got off to a rugged start. What did they lose? 8 straight. Not just a couple points here or there, but 8 straight in regulation to open the season, Chad. And they've really turned things around. I think they're 9-2-2 in their last 11. This is not going to be a slam dunk team, as Ron Francis' team is starting to find its way.
They're not a bad team. At the beginning of the season, it was basically them and Buffalo, and that was the McDavid-Eichel sweepstakes. But Carolina has turned it around. They're a much better team. I think that a lot of this game comes down to, I think that the Wild are the better team. So this is similar to the Florida game, almost like a trap game. The Wild have an absolutely huge road trip coming up. We'll see if they're doing the same thing as me. And looking ahead, I was just checking in for my flight tomorrow to Vancouver on my phone. So we'll see if the Wild are doing the same thing. But the road trip is huge. I mean, we talked about the fact that they're chasing Vancouver, they're chasing Calgary. Those are absolutely monster games. But you got to take care of the ones that you can against the lower talented Eastern Conference teams, and that's what they have tonight.
And, you know, and this team is, it is 9-3-3 since 2015. And one of the things that Coach Bill Peters, who's in his first year as a National Hockey League head coach, said is the team is much better. They're more competitive. They have the puck more. They're winning faceoffs. They're in the top 10% of the league in that category. Minnesota Wild, being a possession team, are going to have to bear down in the faceoff circle tonight. They have players, the Stahl brothers, you know, they've been injured and in and out of the lineup. They're both healthy from what I understand. And really, Alexander Semin has been kind of the wild card for that team. He has not been able to really get things going this year. But if he can be dangerous on a given night, we know what he's capable of doing. So this is not a slam dunk. And it's interesting that you say that you were looking ahead to your travel plans to Vancouver. This team can't do that. They cannot look ahead to anything. And I think the most important thing is what you do feel as though the club really understands that concept. Are you feeling that from the room?
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we talked about when we talked about, you know, them playing four games in 6 days. That's sort of the mentally taxing part of this. Because of the hole that the Wild put themselves in January, they just can't afford to be losing any games right now, including games to Carolina. So the Wild put themselves in such a deep hole that they have to treat each of these games, you know, as a must win, and that's so mentally taxing. So I think it's going to be interesting to see whether this can continue for the Wild, because physically I think that they can. The schedule is basically a game, day off, game, day off. So physically I think that they can, but this is just a really grinding schedule coming down the stretch mentally.
So they start in Vancouver on this trip.
Yeah.
Then I believe they head to Calgary, then Edmonton?
Correct.
Okay, so they kind of invert.
Right,
that,
so it's that the opposite of how it worked out last time.
Were they getting creative here? Is that, I mean, so, but it's the same three teams with the same importance. You know, Edmonton, obviously, a game you should win.
Right.
Pick up two clean points, no giving away extra points there. Calgary's a must win. And I don't care what anybody says. That is a very difficult building to play in. I've never been in that building, but from your feel, what is the vibe in Calgary? It seems like a very difficult facility to play in.
It is. Everybody there says that. I mean, it's a very good crowd. I mean, it's a quiet crowd, to be honest. I was sitting next
artists,
to somebody. And
they're watching art.
I said, you know, this is one of the few places that's quieter than St. Paul and the X. And the guy next to me goes, that's because these are two places who actually know what they're watching. But Calgary, for those who haven't watched much of Calgary, Calgary is a much improved team. And that's a huge game. When you look at these standings, Calgary is one of those teams that the Wild are likely going to need to leapfrog. Maybe it's Winnipeg. Maybe if San Jose falters, it could go that way. But when you look at these standings, two of these teams are going to get in as the wild card teams. In your opinion, you know, who is getting in? Winnipeg is six right now, but, you know, they've played more games than anybody. Vancouver has 65 points in 54 games. Calgary has 63 points in 55 games. Then you've got the Wild right there.
The interesting part of that question is, when you think about it, those three teams were non-playoff teams last year. Of the three that I think the most dynamic improvement really goes to the Vancouver Canucks, because under Tortorella, ooh, were they rough last year. That was absolute drama and chaos beyond belief, and fun to watch, actually, from here being a Canucks basher. But at the same token, I think Bob Hartley is such a good coach. He is turning that thing into a Bob Hartley type of team with great young talent. They are going to be a major issue for the National Hockey League in the next 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know if this year is their year yet. I'm not sold on that. I still think Vancouver can self-destruct a little bit. And Winnipeg, it's all going to depend upon if this dealing of Evander Kane and all of the things that occurred there, if Stafford can come in and do the job, and if Tyler Myers can be Tyler Myers. I mean, they don't lose a lot in that situation, may gain. Yet they still haven't done it as a group. They've self-destructed. It comes back to Paul Maurice, the coach, who's allowed all that garbage to occur in the locker room, lets the inmates run the asylum, and Shovel Day Off, the GM, allowed it to happen. So the question is, who's going to be there? You still have Los Angeles, Minnesota, and Dallas, all playoff teams. The question is, can they propel past those three teams? It's possible.
Isn't that frightening, though? I mean, you could be one of those three teams, and lurking are Minnesota, which hasn't lost in regulation since the All-Star break, Los Angeles, two cups in the last 3 years, and three straight wins. I mean, if you're a team in those top eight, how can you feel any sort of comfort right now? So if it's me, my guess right now would be that Los Angeles probably doesn't get in. I think that...
Why? I mean, I agree with you, but what do you think?
I just think that Calgary is a much better team than a lot of people give them credit for.
I agree.
Los Angeles hasn't been that good on the road. And to make the playoffs down the stretch, you've got to be taking care of business on the road. So I think that Winnipeg probably is the team that comes out, and Minnesota is the team that comes in. After that, I don't think that there are any other changes. Dallas is a team to watch for, although we still need to learn a little bit more about Tyler Seguin's injury. They just traded for a goalie, Jonas Enroth, who is one of those goalies that some Wild fans wanted to come to Minnesota. Obviously, Devan Dubnyk has worked out just a little bit for the Wild.
You brought that up a couple of shows ago, and I shuddered at the thought. I mean, you know, so two quick thoughts. Congratulations to Evgeny Nabokov for getting traded back to San Jose to retire a Shark. He is his goalie coach, my goalie coach, same guy, Warren Strail, the great late. I've talked about him a lot. He's shaped me as a coach and a hockey mind for my entire life while he was with us. And if you heard what Evgeny Nabokov said about Strelo's influence on him as a goaltender, and I'm sure Mika Kiprusoff, these are two, and Marty Brodeur and Pete Peters, these are legends in the game. What they have to say about him was huge. So there's a little bit of goaltending knowledge coming from this end of the microphone. Enroth, to me, is a nightmare waiting to happen, and Dallas can have him, and they're going to have diminished returns. Mark it right here.
And they don't play a very strong defensive game, so whoever their goalie is has to do it all on their own. So I don't think that Dallas is going to get in, although they're right there too. So I think Colorado is probably, you can pretty much safely write them off at this point. They've lost four straight. They're getting out of this. So Dallas, L.A., Minnesota, I think one of those is getting in. I don't think it's two. And right now,
you think it's Winnipeg, don't you? You
that's
think
coming
they're the
out.
Ones that are going to dribble out
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, I think the Jets are coming out.
Well, it's fair to say. I mean, and I think we laid the case for it in our second segment, really laying out what happened and what the situation is. There's always a reason to why these things occur. For Minnesota, it's going to be if you continue to win, if any of these teams continue to win and put pressure on those teams that we mentioned, those three non-playoff teams from last year who are feeling it, if they can continue to put that kind of pressure on them, that becomes more difficult each game. Gets amplified each mistake. And this is playoff hockey for what, about 6-7 markets in the West? That's what the NHL wants.
Yeah, that's exciting. And
awesome.
That starts with this upcoming road trip. So we'll see if the Wild look past Carolina tonight, as I have toward this beautiful Western Canada swing on this road trip.
You don't mind it, though, do you?
No, I love Vancouver.
How could you not?
It's terrific.
You're pining for a job out there, right?
I've got my window seat tomorrow. I'm already planning the Instagram post. This
absolutely
is going to be terrific.
So you're going to see the whales bobbing
exactly.
The whole deal. That's awesome. Chad, travel safe.
All right, thank you.
We'll be back next week with more On the Ice. Great work. David Helmer, thank you very much. To everybody, have themselves a great Valentine's Day and enjoy your hockey week. I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.